Welcome to another edition of the Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan Hockey Translator, where we take actual players and coaches' quotes and tell you what they really mean. Tonight, we bring you Claude Julien's press conference after the 4-2 preseason loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And now Claude Julien on the frustrations of losing.
Well, there's frustration of not winning. I hate to lose, okay? And I don't like to lose, so...
But what he really meant was...
Jeez, guys, we just played the Toronto Marlies and lost to them. We had the best goaltender on the planet in net, no Austin Matthews, and some guy named Marinson scored. I don't even know who the hell that is. No, seriously, who is Marinson? Where is he from? Who is that guy?
And now Claude Julien talks about his core players.
I haven't really seen the core group more or less be the reason for us losing games.
But what he really meant was...
Oh, I hope my core group starts to perform soon, because I can only use the it's only preseason excuse for maybe a few more days. Seriously, we haven't won in the preseason. I feel like my soul is dying.
And now Claude on the prospects needing to show more.
I think right now there's some guys that have to seize that opportunity to gain those spots that are open for them.
But what he really meant was...
Don't fool yourself. I'm talking about McCarron and De La Rose. You know, that brilliant talent that's supposed to help this team. Man, if Bergevin doesn't get me some talent soon, what about Scherbak? Oh, that's right. We sent him down the other day.
And finally, Claude Julien on Michael McCarron fighting.
He has to do what he has to do. Like, for me, the part that I say I don't care is if he feels that he has to, he's got to do it.
But what he really meant was...
So you picking a fight in our preseason is supposed to impress me. Really? Really? Watching you is like watching an enormous red traffic pylon trying to body check a small refrigerator.
That's some incredible insight there, isn't it?
It is, especially when you consider that he's starting to sound really old and tired. I'm kind of worried about Julien, aren't you?
Only six games in and he's sounding old and tired. Poor man. Poor man.
Let's be clear. There's something profoundly wrong when there's this much media attention on a team that's winless in the preseason. Like, really, what are we talking about here? The preseason.
Yes.
Only
yes.
Montreal and Toronto, surprisingly enough.
Well, yeah, and I don't want to spoil it, but in a few minutes you will hear that
spoiler.
I do talk about it only being the preseason. So I understand where that's coming from, but I do believe there are some important aspects of the preseason. But yes, it is concerning, while it isn't concerning at the same time.
So I'm sorry, Kamal, but it's time to be very sincere, frank, and candid with one another. We asked the question to our followers, how do you feel about the Montreal Canadiens 0-5 start? And since then, they've lost again. And the results of that poll was worrisome because over half the people who voted were basically saying, I'm legitimately concerned. Are you legitimately worried?
No, I am not legitimately worried because, for a couple reasons, one, we still haven't seen the full roster play together. That actually gives me a little bit of calm with this storm of the 0-6 preseason. What does concern me, though, are that some of the youngsters are not stepping up, and that's what I talk about later, 0-6 start. But overall, no, I'm not too concerned. 0-6 doesn't concern me. Full roster hasn't been in place. Carey Price won't let in 4 goals against an AHL team very often. And I think that there's still some chemistry.
Well, speaking of chemistry stuff... Your hero, Carey Price, went on television and basically declared that. He proclaimed that. He said, we're still getting to know one another. Chill out. Take it easy. The media just doesn't learn. The Montreal media is ridiculous. I thought the Toronto media was bad, and we can agree it is bad. Whether it's an issue of credibility or skill and how many times someone throws a microphone in the face of a Leafs player and asks them to talk about their goal. Talk about your overtime goal. Talk about it. I'm a journalist. I'm going to let you do my job for me. I don't even know what that voice is, but that's how an ill-informed journalist acts. And, you know, you look in Montreal, and I don't know how it is, but you got to figure they spend like months out of the year training their players to deal with the media because they look like they're really well disciplined to deal with them. Because some of them, I would just lose my composure and start flailing my fists.
Well, that is one of the reasons why a lot of people think that Montreal can't attract free agents is because of the media. And then that's kind of sad to say because I think there's maybe a bit of pride in the fact that the media can actually influence a player and the team. I think there's some sort of... I think they do take pride in that, but they shouldn't because it's actually harming the Montreal Canadiens. If they were a little bit easier on them, maybe they would be able to attract more free agents. Now, there are other reasons, of course.
Yeah.
Weather, taxes, media, language, culture. But, I mean, if media wasn't so hard, maybe it just might make it a little bit easier to attract John Tavares, for example.
Well, that sounds like at this stage you're just writing a thesis. You should run that as a university course on the finer points of how to attract an audience. The saddest part for me was the optics. It's the optics that you played back-to-back games against what will be your greatest rival, and you lost. And the media doesn't have anything else better to do right now. I mean, baseball's not an option, even though I should say that the Blue Jays will be better next year. But that's all I'm going to say about that.
Based on what?
You really want to go there? Because I'll do that. We'll go there on this podcast.
Based on Teoscar Hernandez hitting 8 home runs in September.
Based on fear. Fear of knowing that the Toronto Maple Leafs might render them irrelevant. They will have no choice. There'll be fear. There'll be fear. Duopoly notwithstanding, there'll be great fear. You saw what happened in 2015 when they became popular again and the Leafs were struggling. Leafs actually...
What did I see?
Well, you saw fair-weathered fans. It's a fair-weather market. See, that's the difference between your fan base and my fan base. Your fan base has all the credibility in the world to say that they are true hockey fans, and mine does not. But we're proud of that. Leave us alone. You watched both games. Did you take anything positive from it? Like, were there certain things while you were watching the Canadiens that you said to yourself, okay, there's something redeemable on the horizon?
The one positive that, one of the positives that I saw was Jonathan Drouin's skill.
Oh, he's so good.
The breakaway goal was quite a delight to see as he went backhand top shelf on Curtis McElhaney. You know, it's not Freddie Anderson, but what are you going to do? Other positives, Gallagher dropping the gloves on Monday night, I guess, and maybe that's Gallagher saying that, hey, look at me, everyone, my hands are okay, that I'm not scared of hurting my hands by fighting.
I think that's more Gallagher saying that I'm going to have a kick-ass rivalry with Nazem Kadri all year. And I think fans are going to love that. They're going to beat each other's throats this year.
Yeah, he gave Kadri a nice clean hit from a slightly blindsided attempt. He did his best Leo Komarov impersonation.
You know, I wouldn't say that because I think Leo Komarov's going to end up outperforming both of those players at this rate. So that's
Kadri and Gallagher?
When it comes to our friend Nazem Kadri, would you agree that he's going to be the most underrated Maple Leaf this year, considering what the expectations are of some of these other players? Is he going to be under the radar again and maybe do what he did last year?
I don't think he was ever under the radar at all because, one, really? He was a -7 last year, and you and your friends and all your other friends and all your other Leaf fans were talking about him for a Selkie.
A lot of friends.
You were heralding a -7 player for a Selkie. And again, that's only in Toronto. It's the best. I have never seen that. A -7 player for a Selkie. Keep heralding.
You know, it's a testament to the treasure trove of depth, talent, and riches that the Maple Leafs have in their coffers this year that is no doubt making you, the fan, think to yourself, my God, it's going to be all roses and lollipops and unicorns all season long and for the next 5 years. But this is where I urge everyone listening to temper their expectations. Remember, this is the National Hockey League, and winning is an extremely difficult thing to do in a game that has now been modernized to be all about speed and skill. And yes, the Toronto Maple Leafs are well equipped with their wingers and with their defensemen this year to be a fleet-footed team. But as you've seen during the preseason, for all the recent goals that have been scored and how the record has been improving, bear in mind the first couple of games during the preseason this year. The Maple Leafs still have a suspect defensive core that is learning how to cover ground the Mike Babcock way. And although Riley, Gardner, and Zaitsev can be relied upon to take great strides this year, the fact remains that over half of the Leafs' defensive core is littered with players who are trying to prove themselves. There's still a lot of work to be done. Traditionally, a Stanley Cup contending defensive core consists of a 1-2 stud pairing along with the kind of top four depth that guarantees that you can hold leads late in games. And need I remind fans of the Toronto Maple Leafs that last year the Leafs had one of the worst records in overtime, a testament to the fact that when it came down to clutch performances in OT, they just didn't get enough value from their rear guards. Organizationally, the hope remains with this leadership group that players like Travis Dermott, Callie Rosen, and Andreas Borgman, and Martin Marincin will be able to take these steps necessary to make the Leafs a credible team. But once again, I urge patience. The toughest position in this league to develop are defensemen. If not for the fact that Morgan Riley had hurt himself, there's a very good chance that Brian Burke would have taken him first overall, a testament again to how rare it is to find stud defensemen.
It's only preseason. I've been hearing a lot of this lately, and while it is true, I'm still slightly bothered by Montreal's 0-6 preseason start. Why? Well, a lot of the deficiencies that Habs fans and hockey experts predicted seem to be coming true in this preseason. They were concerned about Montreal's defense and their ability to replace the dearly departed Markov, Alexei Yemelin, and Nathan Beaulieu. Well, Montreal's defense hasn't looked great so far this preseason. In six games, they've allowed 25 goals. They were concerned about Montreal's lack of scoring. In six games so far, Montreal has scored 9 goals, no more than 2 goals in one preseason game. But essentially, I'm actually okay with this because yes, it is the preseason. And the veterans don't really think much of the preseason. But where I am concerned, and why I should be concerned, is because the preseason counts for a lot of the youngsters. It's important for the youngsters. The young prospects trying to play their way onto the team. Michael McCarron and Jacob Delarose were the big focus last night, and even you could take a look at PTO candidate Eric Jelena. While Delarose did look slightly better, McCarron also had a meaningless fight. What concerns me is that the guys really didn't stand out, and they essentially did the exact opposite. They were pretty much invisible for the game. And this, again, this was an AHL team they were playing against. And the only thing that I can think of as to why they didn't show up last night, I can only think of two reasons why they didn't grab the proverbial bull by the horns and make a statement by saying, I belong in the NHL. One of the reasons I was thinking of, maybe they just don't have the heart or desire to step it up. Now that's concerning. And another reason, and I think this is actually more concerning for me, is that maybe they're just not good enough. Maybe Jacob Delarose and Michael McCarron aren't true NHL players. And this concerns me especially for McCarron because this could be yet another Montreal first-round bust. The Leafs AHLers, as much as I hate to admit it, they actually looked inspired, focused, and organized. A very good sign that the Leafs development system is working, and meanwhile, we're questioning whether Montreal's development system is actually doing a good job. These are big questions to have and a big question for the Montreal Canadiens organization. But then again, it is only the preseason.
Our next guest on Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan is the site expert of the Vegas Hockey Night on Twitter. His name is Michael Gibran from FanSided. Michael, thanks for joining HVL.
Yep, no problem.
Now, Michael, we've had a lot of fans of our podcast and of hockey in general seemingly dismissing what the Vegas Golden Knights are going to do in 2017-2018. I want to hear it straight from you as someone who follows them and is a pure expert on all things related to the Vegas Golden Knights. What are your realistic expectations of this team in this upcoming NHL season?
For the first year, I'm not expecting too much. You should be seeing them going into like a rebuild because as a new team, they have to stock up with draft picks. You have to get young players and you're going to have to wait a couple of years before they can actually make the playoffs. So for the first year, I'm expecting them to finish around the bottom end of like the standings, but you can also expect to see a lot of their younger players step up and try to make a name for themselves right now.
Give us the players in your opinion that NHL fans, fair weather and hardcore alike, should be paying attention to this year.
I think a big one would be Cody Glass. You should also be looking at Brandon Leipzig, one of the players that was drafted from the Leafs. Being a Leafs fan myself, I know a lot about him, and he could be a really big asset for the Vegas Golden Knights going forward. And then you have your veterans in James Neal and Jonathan Marchessault. And then you have, obviously, Fleury in net, and he can be like a really big advantage for them.
Now, in the case of Leipzig, as most Maple Leafs fans who are followers of our show are probably wincing in hearing that name again, didn't you get the impression that that was a player that the Leafs themselves thought they had a rosy future with? What happened in the genesis of how he ended up leaving Toronto?
I believe that they decided to choose Matt Martin over him. And I can understand the reasoning behind it, considering Martin's asset with being like a big brother to Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. So I can understand why they decided to keep him over Leipzig, but Leipzig has untouched potential yet. He could become like a top nine, top six forward even. If he can figure out how to play in the NHL quickly, he could use his speed, his skill. He can become a very, very good player.
Now, in a recent article you wrote about James Neal, whom you'd mentioned earlier, what's happened with him, specifically with his career? This was a player, I think, a few years back who was truly regarded as one of the hot commodities in the NHL, a really rugged power winger who can come at you from all directions and play in all sorts of special teams. Why do you think he's been moved around this many times in his NHL career?
Well, playing on depth teams like Pittsburgh and Nashville, if you lose a touch, you'll quickly find your way down on like the third or fourth line. So with Nashville, I was surprised to see that they did not decide to protect him. You could say that after his performance that there is reasons why they decided not to, but his overall game style and the way that he plays is not usual. He's like a James Greensdyke, but he likes being in front of the net, but he can also shoot from outside of the end, like the top of the circle, and he's also a really, really good playmaker. So for Vegas, being able to get somebody like that, that is a really big advantage, especially being like a new team and having somebody like that right off the bat. That could be a very, very good advantage. Plus, because of his experience, he could help players like Cody Glass become, and Nick Suzuki, NHL. If they're going back in the NHL and the AHL, even juniors, he could be a really, really big advantage for experience. So for the Knights, I believe that he was one of their best acquisitions to pick up.
Now, another great article that you have on the Fansided Network from about a week ago was asking the philosophical question if the Vegas Golden Knights should tank in order to go after that first overall pick for the following year. What are your thoughts philosophically on the concept of tanking, especially when it's the kind of tanking that isn't overt, in much the way the Maple Leafs were able to acquire Austin Matthews? Do you philosophically look at that as something that the league should really be paying attention to not reward teams who are deliberately bad?
Well, I think that's why they included the draft lottery, to stop teams from doing that. But you also have to remember that these teams, they have to build from the draft, and you can't complain for them trying to be bad in order to get good draft picks, because as it is, you have to be bad to become better. And teams like Chicago, like Pittsburgh, like Toronto, they all had to go through the draft and draft their teams in order to become good now. So I expect that from Vegas. I think that the league will try and find ways to stop teams from doing that, but I don't think there's ever going to be a way to stop teams entirely from doing it.
Michael, tell our listeners at HVL what you've been working on, what kind of articles you have on the horizon, and where they can find you on social media.
Well, on social media, you can find me on Twitter at Jabran Michael. And for the Vegas Hockey Night site, myself, I am trying to do a series right now where I cover all 30 teams and I show who Vegas took, why they took them, and what other options they had, and if they made the smart choice, in my opinion. And that just covers all 30 teams, and I also do line combinations to what I think Vegas will cover. And I'm also going to start doing a couple of rookie predictions for players who I think will be able to crack the starting lineup.
Be sure to check out Michael Jabran's fine work on Fansided. He is the site expert of Vegas Hockey Night. Michael, thanks for coming on HBO.
Yeah, thanks for having me.